The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
Hello, welcome once again to Grace in Focus. Today's program is a question and answer program. Bob Wilkin, along with Steve Elkins, will be handling our discussion today. Make sure and visit our website, faithalone.org. You'll find lots of articles and lots of information about who we are at the Grace Evangelical Society. In the parable of the wedding feast, how is the outer darkness related to the four soils of Blue Gate? Let's find out.
Welcome back to Grace in Focus. Steve, what do you have for us today?
Bob, this is a good question from Martin. He says, Dr. Wilkin, in Matthew 22, it discusses the parable of the wedding feast. I want to focus on verses 13 through 14, so let's read those real quick. Matthew 22, 13 says, then the king said to the servants, bind him hand and foot, take him away, and cast him into the outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are called, but few are chosen. That's at the end of the parable of the wedding feast, Matthew 22. Then he says, am I off base to think that those thrown in the outer darkness are the soils 2 and 3 found in Luke 8, 11 through 15? So let's look at Luke 8, 11 through 15 and see what that says. The parable of the soils. Maybe we don't need to read the whole parable.
Yeah, basically, just to summarize, the first soil, the seed is sown on the path, the birds eat it, and it's taken away. And it says, Satan snatches away the seed, lest they should believe and be saved.
That's right.
The second seed falls on rocky soil, and they believe for a time, and then in time of temptation fall away. And this suggests a believer who falls away and doesn't persevere. The third is the thorny soil, where there's weeds mixed in with the seeds, and they're both growing up, and the weeds choke out its effectiveness, so it doesn't bring fruit to maturity. It brings forth fruit, but not mature fruit. And then the fourth soil is the good soil, and it's the one that believes, perseveres, and is very productive. And so basically, 2, 3, and 4 are all believers. 2 is a believer that doesn't even get to rule with Christ because they don't persevere. 3 is a believer who gets to rule, but they are not wholehearted. And so I would suggest that, no, Martin, it's not 2, the second and third. Just the second soil illustrates the person you're talking about here in Matthew 22. And I'm not sure if Martin is saying this person's a believer or an unbeliever.
He just says, am I off base to think that the outer darkness are the soils 2 and 3 found in Luke 8?
Oh, he's asking about the outer darkness?
Right.
Okay, so he wouldn't mean the seeds. He means the destiny of the seeds. And, of course, there's the question of what is the outer darkness. Let me point to some articles by Michael Huber. He did his thesis at Dallas Seminary on the outer darkness passages. Guess what? All three are in Matthew. Matthew 8, Matthew 22, Matthew 25. And he argued, I think quite convincingly, that all three refer to not a literal place, but a figurative experience for the believer who's unfaithful. He will not be permitted to rule with Christ. That's what it means, that the outer darkness does not refer to a literal place, and it's not exclusion from the kingdom or something like that. And we actually have an article in our journal available free online at faithalone.org from Huber. Also, Greg Sapaw did his master's thesis on this specific passage, Matthew 22, the parable of the wedding feast. He builds on what Huber did, and he points out that the outer darkness is not hell, it's not the lake of fire, but it's darkness that's outside the wedding feast. It's missing out on the joys associated with the wedding feast. And one of the things he points out is this person is one who accepted the wedding invitation, and he's come to the wedding feast. So he's there. The problem is not that he didn't accept the wedding invitation, not that he didn't believe. The problem is he's not properly dressed. He doesn't have on his tuxedo. He's got on jeans and T-shirt, you know, those T-shirts with no arms. Well, anyway, this guy's not properly dressed. And so he's excluded from the festivities. But I think it's important to recognize that the outer darkness in Matthew 8, we're told that it's the sons of the kingdom that are cast into the outer darkness. Well, guess what? The only other place in Matthew where the sons of the kingdom occur is in Matthew 12 with the wheat and the tares.
13, Matthew
13. I'm at 13. Yeah. And the wheat are the sons of the kingdom. It's not the tares. So They're getting in. Yeah, what is it, 1328, I think?
Yeah, and they're obviously sons of the kingdom or saved people. So when you assume that for interpretation purposes in Matthew 8, you've got saved people who are thrown into the outer darkness. Now you're scratching your head. Well, outer darkness must not be hell. What is it? Well, of course, it's a metaphor. It's the outer boundaries of that lighted banquet hall. And if you were there and you're looking at how great that banquet's going to be, especially in Matthew 8 with Abraham, Isaac, and all the patriarchs, man, you would want to be in on it, and you're going to miss out.
Right. Hodges has a good discussion of this. In fact, we have, I believe, a whole book called The Outer Darkness, where Zane and I interacted in some discussion. We recorded it and then had it transcribed, called What is the Outer Darkness? But there's a lot of articles on our website about this. But his point is it should be translated the darkness outside.
Bob Martin went on to say, is there any correlation between verses 13 and 14 in Matthew 22, the ones we just looked at, to what the Apostle Paul is saying in 2 Timothy 2:10 through 13?
Yeah, that's the famous passage about if we endure, we'll reign. If we deny him, he'll deny us. But if we're faithless, he remains faithful. You want to read that one?
Yes. For this is a faithful saying. For if we died with him, we shall also live with him. If we endure, we shall also reign with him. If we deny him, he also will deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful. He cannot deny, really contradict would be a better translation there. He cannot contradict himself.
Yeah, so I would say what verse 13 is saying is that since we're believers in Jesus Christ, he has promised that we have everlasting life. Therefore, he's got to be faithful to the promise, even if we're faithless. However, in verse 12, most commentators point out that's an explanation of Matthew 10, 32, and 33. That's where Jesus said, he who confesses me before men, him will I confess before my Father who is in heaven. He who denies me before men, him will I deny before my Father who is in heaven. Well, I believe that's judgment seat of Christ truth, and I believe Paul brings that out here. If we endure, we will reign with him. Well, the opposite of that is if we don't endure, we won't reign. But Paul says it by quoting more or less Matthew 10:33. He who denies me before men, him will I deny before my Father. So if we deny him, he will deny us. Denying him means we're not enduring. At the end of our life, we're not confessing Christ. And he will deny us what? The privilege of reigning with
Absolutely.
Him. So at the judgment seat of Christ, some people he's going to say, okay, here is Larry, and Larry endured. Larry's going to rule with me. Larry, have authority over 10 cities. Enter into the joy of your master, right? Then he'll come to somebody else, and he's going to say, I'm sorry, but you didn't endure. You're not going to rule. You're not going to have any cities to rule over. Now, there'll be, in my opinion, treasure, because any treasure we lay up is guaranteed. But ruling with Christ is a perseverance prize.
And in 2:13, it's like Paul is saying, and to make sure you know I'm not talking about denying Christ and losing salvation, he gives a great eternal security verse.
Exactly.
If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot contradict himself.
In fact, Brad McCoy wrote one of our first journal articles, Secure Yet Scrutinized, on this passage. And he said both 11 and 13 are statements of eternal security.
Yes.
For if we died with him, we shall also live with him. Well, the moment we believe in Christ, we've been placed into his death.
That's right.
Therefore, we're also guaranteed that we're going to live with him forever.
Right.
And verse 13 is also a statement of eternal security.
Now, Bob, we didn't really deal with Matthew 22:14. The last verse says, for many are called, but few are chosen. And as you know, that's often taken by Calvinists, lordship people, and others to refer to chosen or elect for salvation.
Yeah, that's often a mistake. In fact, it's always a mistake because many are called and few are chosen refers to ruling with Christ. That's obvious, I think, in this passage. The issue here is who's going to be chosen to take part in this wedding feast? And if the wedding feast symbolizes being Christ's partners in the life to come, ruling with him, well, then that's only those who are properly dressed. And by the way, if you tie that in with the book of Revelation, we find that the white garments are the righteous deeds of the saints.
Right.
And although this isn't in the book of Revelation, it's probably the same kind of idea. They're improperly dressed because they have not lived righteously.
And too often people put in the Isaiah passage about being clothed in his righteousness or righteous robes, but that's not what this is talking about.
No. Yeah. That's a positional truth. This is an experiential truth. This person's not dressed right.
And he's not ready to face the judgment seat, doesn't have works in his life, as the Revelation passage would indicate.
Well, he may have works, you know, because I think all, even unbelievers, have good works, but the point is, this is not a person who has persevered in his confession of Christ, his walk with Christ. And so, regardless of how many works he does or doesn't have in his past, if we don't endure, we're not going to reign with him.
And the other thing, too, on this passage that many are called but few are chosen, it's only found in rewards passages, like two chapters earlier, the parable of the vineyard workers, where the word misthos keeps being used, wages. It's all about wages, and same word for reward, by the way. And the same in 2 Peter chapter 1.
Yeah, make your calling and election sure.
Yes, and that drove people crazy back in the Puritan days because they just gave up on Christianity because they weren't seeing these fruits or these works listed in 2 Peter 1 growing in their lives. So they said, well, I guess I'm not elect, and they just gave up on it.
This election is who's going to be chosen to rule with Christ.
Absolutely, and 2 Peter makes it clear because he's talking about these things, if you work hard at adding them to your faith, perseverance, godliness, etc., they will supply to you an abundant entrance into the kingdom.
Yeah, what's interesting, 2 Peter 1, 5 through 11 begins with add to your faith, and it's the verb epikoregeo, and it ends with so a rich entrance to the kingdom will be added to you, same verb epikoregeo. Right. You got to add something to your faith to get the rich entrance.
And you've got to work very hard at it.
Well, we're out of time, but that was Martin, is that right? So thank you so much for your question. It was a good one, and I encourage you, look at the book, What is the Outer Darkness? Or look at the articles on our website by Huber and by Sapaw. Did you have anything else there before we close, Steve?
Keep grace in focus.
Thank you.
Zane Hodges' book, The Gospel Under Siege, A Study About Faith and Works in Tension, is being offered this month to Grace in Focus listeners and available right now at half price through June the 30th when you use the discount code word SIEGE, S-I-E-G-E. Find this special offer at faithalone.org. Are you interested in finding other Free Grace believers just like yourself in your area? Well, you can do that by going to our website, faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. On our website, we have a church tracker. It's an easy-to-use map that will help you locate those other Free Grace churches that might be in your area. So come visit us at the website and take advantage of our free church tracker. It's at faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. There are a lot of costs involved in staying on the air. That's why we so much appreciate our financial partners. If you'd like to learn how to become one, you can find out more by going to faithalone.org. We would love to hear from you. Maybe you've got a question, comment, or some feedback. If you do, please don't hesitate to send us a message. Here's our email address. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Next time on Grace in Focus, are you ever afraid of witnessing to unbelievers? Join us, we'll talk about it. This is the Grace Evangelical Society. Until next time, let's keep grace in focus.
The preceding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.